Welcome to those who are joining us tonight for the first time. And I think I gave everybody a session handout from the course so that you can see where we're going. We're in session two tonight. And the handouts from last night's session are on the table. If you at some point want them, you don't necessarily need them for our time together tonight. I want to start with a reading from John chapter 21. It's the one of the post-resurrection stories from John's Gospel. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the Twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." They said to him, "We will go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." And Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, and he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. That has to be one of my favorite passages in the whole of the Bible. It makes no sense whatsoever. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, but they were not far from the land, only about 100 yards off. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now, none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." Jesus said to Peter the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he had said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." In a text study, with some pastors, one of my friends in the group mentioned to us the dreamlike nature of this reading. And if you think about it, it really kind of does sound like a dream. I can see the disciples a few weeks or months or years later going, "Did that really happen? Did we really catch that many fish? It seems kind of unreal." You ever had one of those dreams? You ever woken up and thought, "Yeah, it was connected to my life, but I'm not sure what all that meant, and who this person seemed right, but no, that person wasn't. I thought it was that person, but it wasn't that person." You know that feeling? Any nodding heads around here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep that in mind about this gospel reading, and then I'd like for you to enjoy this incredible piece of music.
Stars growing dim by the lakeside, huddled up close to the fire. The fish weren't biting as much as the cold was, and all of us bitter in time. Then out from the mist and the shadows, so pale with the moon on her skin, up from the water, my own lovely daughter, she looked us all over and grinned. She said, "You're scaring the fish with those long sullen faces. Lighten up or you won't stand a chance. I have been to the ball and I've seen my sweet Jesus and all that he wants you to do is dance." She said, dance with the lonely, dance with the lost, dance with the ones whom to dance with will cost you. When you're worn out from the weight of that cross, just dance gently and slowly. Tears, they were burning my eyes. 7 hard years since we stood on that shoreline, cursing the waves and the skies. She said, Dad, are you sure you still love me? I said, darling, you know that I do. Not a day ever goes by I don't see your eyes there in the waters deep. She said, then dance with the hungry, the naked and blind, with the ones who are chained in their body or mind. Go and dance even when you know they're bound to fall, and when you know that they have no legs at all.
So tonight, what I want to do is a little bit more teaching and then begin some exploration, and then tomorrow and Thursday we'll continue applying this to our particular lives. So the first word that I want to look at and find an alternative to is church. And I want to state that we are church, that is, we are God's people when we are gathered, and we are God's people when we are scattered. The problem with this is it doesn't avoid this word church. I wish we could, but I can't find a way around that. But talking about the gathered church and the scattered church does modify it, and it helps to clarify it. So the gathered church, or the gathered people of God, and the scattered church, or the scattered people of God. So what kind of things do we do when we are gathered church?
Worship.
Worship, probably the central, and should be the central thing that we do when we gather. What else do we do when we gather?
Coffee hour, conversation,
community, mm-hmm. Another hallmark of the church. Important.
Service.
Mm-hmm. We do some service together. Mm-hmm.
Bible study and Sunday school
and confirmation, and we do funerals, and we do baptisms and weddings. and all kinds of things. The service that we do when we do together is important service, because there are some things that we can do better together than we can do alone. You know, one-on-one, we can't feed the hungry people in the community. We might give somebody a handout here or there, but we can't do that alone as well as we can do it together. All of these things are appropriate and vital. Do not hear me ever that I'm putting down the gathered church. Gathered church is important. We need to do that. We need to continue doing that in order to exist as God's people. But more important for our conversation is that we gather in order to be fed, to be strengthened, to be equipped, and then we scatter once again to serve our neighbor. It's a regular rhythm. There's nothing new about this. We are used to this. We know this pattern, and we know it well. Again, it's not an either-or choice. We are both gathered and scattered. In fact, the gathered church needs the scattering. We desperately need it. For without scattering to love and serve in the world, then our gathering becomes a little more than a social club or a community.
A click. Country club.
Country club. That's the phrase that I was looking for. And likewise, the scattered church needs the gathered church. Because if we are only scattered, then we're subject to burnout and loss of focus and loss of purpose and reason for what we're doing. So in the scattering, we need to return to the gathering in order to get reoriented, to be forgiven for what it was that we failed to do, to be strengthened and equipped and prayed for, and then sent back out into the world again. The most helpful part of this alternative language is that it overcomes the limitations that we impose on it with those synonyms that we've mentioned: a worship service, a building, a community, a denomination. Using the gathered and scattered church, or using the gathered and scattered people of God, reminds us of who and whose we are, and it reminds us of who and what we're called to be. And then reflecting on last night's session, what is it that we're called to be? What is it we're called to do? What's our purpose?
The blessed Lord.
The current state of the church, as I've been studying it, is that we understand gathered church. We know how to do gathered church. We know how to gather for worship, and we know how to do Sunday school, and we know how to go out and do a social service projects, all kinds of stuff that we know how to do. We do know how to do scattered church. We do it every day. We leave on Sunday, and we go back into our lives, and we're doing scattered church. The problem is, when we're gathered, we're not giving equal credit to the scattering. We leave life behind, check it at the door, and we come in and do our spiritual thing, and then when we walk out the door, we leave the spiritual thing behind, and we go back out into our life again. So my challenge is to help us become as good at the scattering, as we are at the gathering. That is not to say we need to put down the gathering. The gathering is important, and it needs to stay important. What I want to do is lift up the scattering so that it's equal, that it's an equal part of that. So the next set of words that often hinder us and help, rather than help us live into the promise that Luther envisioned with the priesthood of all believers, is our use of two words, clergy and lay. And for me to put this as concisely as I can, using these two words to talk about distinct roles in the church has denigrated our ability to be God's people, in my opinion. We talk about ministry is the pastor's job, and the feelings that people come to receive or to commune that ministry. One of my biggest surprises in the study that I've been doing in recent years was to get into the etymology of these words clergy and lay. And I've got over here on the whiteboard two Greek words. You may recognize that first one, laos, is the root of our word laity, lay people. And it means simply people. The laos is the people of God. It's no surprise that we all are the laos, the people of God. We are made God's people in the waters of baptism. What we've done, though, is we've separated this out to where you have the laos, the laity, and the clergy, as if clergy aren't lay. Clergy are laos. Clergy are the lay, are the people of God as much as the rest of us are. Then when I got to looking at the word clergy, it comes from this word below there, kleros, is how you pronounce that. This one's a little bit tricky. It means simply lot, share, or inheritance. It's not used in the New Testament to talk about professional ministers, pastors, that kind of thing. It's used to talk about this lot, share, or inheritance. The share in God's gift of redemption that we inherit in our baptism or our clerics. In Ephesians 1:18, it says, so that you may know the riches of God's glorious inheritance among the saints. Again, we all receive that inheritance in the waters of baptism, like we receive being the laos, the people of God. We are heirs of Christ's ministry. We are priests, ministers, and saints. Like Luther says in one quote, he says, in fact, we are all consecrated priests through baptism. As St. Peter says in 1 Peter 2, you are a royal priesthood and a royal priesthood and a priestly kingdom. So, according to the New Testament, we are all laos and kleros, all of us. And we're not different from each other or distinct from each other, as we often tend to say with this use of clergy and lay. So to overcome this hindrance in our life together, I propose building on this gathered and scattered ministry and talking about gathered ministers and scattered ministers. Try it out. Name some gathered ministers. What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Pastors.
Pastors. Okay, let's get that out of the way. Let's name some other gathered ministers.
Church secretary.
I'm sorry?
The church secretary.
Church secretary. Okay.
Sunday school teacher.
Okay.
Confirmation leaders.
Confirmation teachers. Sunday school teachers.
The deacons.
Youth director.
Church council.
Music directors.
Church council.
Church council. Lay readers. And the list goes on and on and on. And it's really fairly easy to do, to name these gathered ministers. It's important to see that when we're talking about gathered ministers, we're not just talking about pastors and deacons. Talking about gathered ministers transcends this clergy and lay dichotomy. We all can and do serve as gathered ministers. So then, what of scattered ministers? Name some scattered ministers.
Teachers.
Teachers.
Nurses.
Says a teacher.
I'm sorry. Nurses. Mm-hmm. Nurses.
Okay. Nurses. Doctors. The helping professions are the easy ones.
Lawyers. Lawyers can help you, actually. They can cause a lot of problems, but they can help as well.
They can help you. Yeah, that's getting towards the trickier ones. Yeah. Lawyers. Name some other scattered ministers.
Parents.
Friends.
Counselors.
Caregivers.
Funeral directors. Why did that come to mind? I don't know.
Coffin makers.
We watched a video last night about the coffin maker.
The barista.
Okay. Yeah.
The what stuff?
The barista.
Clerks behind the counter at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Produce workers. If we go back to Luther's definition that we found in the small catechism about daily bread, everything that our bodies need, food, clothing, house, home, family, parents, children, government workers, he just goes on and on and on. The list of scattered ministers becomes incredibly long. Truck drivers that bring us food. How does food get to the village? By people that drive a barge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we need those folks in order to live. It is really pretty easy to start naming scattered ministers. And what's important to note here is that we overcome the problem with this word ministry. Being a scattered minister is not a matter of doing something extra. It's doing what we do day to day. Those of you who are here, I gave you a reading for overnight, The Adventures of Dad. Did anybody get a chance to look at that? It's a story my sister wrote of my father a couple years before he died, who was getting older and having problems. And my sister was the principal caregiver and had to take him to the doctor on regular occasion. So what did you... Let's see, who read the... Who got to read... Okay, do you get to read the story? What did you see in that story? I asked you to identify the ministries that were taking place in there.
So there were numerous examples of kind of caretaking, driving to doctors, or numerous examples of little extras to make the, you know, the doctor that gave 3 hours and bumped you up in the schedule, even though it was right before Christmas, and lots of little, you know, extras to do what was right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just everyday people that my sister and my father interacted with. My dad became a scattered minister in that. He was...
An encourager and a supporter and an appreciator.
Yeah, he had not been able to see for quite a while. And when the doctor took the bandage off and he could see for the first time, he looked at my sister and he said...
You were pretty in your blue sweater or something. Yeah, it was a compliment.
It was a compliment of how good she looked. Today, he had not been able to see her clearly before the bandage was taken off. So you've got ministers in there. There were people that, when they got back to the place where they lived, there were people that met him and greeted him and said, it was so good to see him, the encouragers that were there. You've got that simple story has a a long list of scattered ministers. As scattered ministers, includes everything that we do for day-to-day, care of family, of our friends, work that we're paid for, life as citizens. I've got a friend that talks about the vocation of a driver, being a careful and courteous driver, so that you care for your neighbor. And it's easy, we jumped right to the helping professions, and that's very normal when I ask this question. But accountants serve as scattered ministers by providing honest and accountable business so that people don't get ripped off in the process. Those who serve in the military are scattered ministers. When you get going, you start sounding like Oprah. Everybody's a scattered minister. We are. So there are two observations worth noting about this particular part of the language. First, and I think most importantly, scattered ministers are not lay people at all. Is a doctor a lay person? In the church, a doctor is a lay person, but not in our... A doctor is a highly skilled professional, knows what they're doing, as are nurses, as are teachers, as are many of the things that we were talking about in our long list. In our role as scattered ministers, it's likely that we are highly trained experts. So we can elevate the ministry of all God's people by recognizing the expertise and the service that we embody in our everyday lives, and I think that's important. And second to note on this is that the phrase gathered ministers does not equal pastors and deacons, and it would be equally essential to note that pastors and deacons are scattered ministers as well. Pastors and deacons are parents, spouses, adult children of aging parents, friends, citizens, consumers, and neighbors. And I think one of the critical tasks in the church, I think one of the most important things that the church can do is work to help our pastors understand that they're scattered ministers and what it means to be out there in the world. Because I know as a parish pastor, I was confined to the church and focused on the church and only worried about the church. And I overlooked my roles as a parent and as a spouse and as a citizen because I was so consumed with that. So then finally, the third word that hinders rather than helps us live into this promise is the word ministry. And we can simply extend this new language that I'm talking about from gathered church and scattered church to scattered ministers and scattered ministers to gathered ministries and scattered ministries. To look at gathered ministries, all we need to do is look at the list of gathered ministers that we talked about a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And gathered ministries include teaching Sunday school and directing choirs and teaching confirmation and reading lessons and all of that. It's a very easy translation. And then it's equally easy to translate that to scattered ministries as well. Again, we don't get around the stumbling block of this word ministry, but we do amplify it and clarify it so that we're clear about when and where these ministries happen and who does it. So there is a tricky point when we get down to gathered and scattered ministries. There is no hard and fast line that this is and this isn't. Because when you get into service projects and that kind of stuff, it starts getting a little bit fuzzy. I tend to include things like going to the shelter or going to the food pantry as gathered ministries, because it's things that we do together with other people from the church, versus feeding our children a Sunday dinner as being a scattered ministry. So here's the promise that comes from all of this new language. It's not new language. It's been used before. But it is, I think, simply a different way of looking at who we are and what we do. And as I said, when we become as good at the scattering as we are at the gathering, we'll find new joy and purpose as we see all of God's people take on their roles as God's people at work in the world. So that's the end of my teaching, and I want to move into a different exercise with you all now. But before we do that, I want to just make sure, are there any questions or observations from those distinctions?
I keep thinking about that word secular.
Secular?
People thinking that anything outside of the building
mm-hmm.
or anything outside of the gathered body
mm-hmm.
is secular and therefore not counting as ministry like you were talking about.
Yeah.
And it's part of the narrow definition that we put on
mm-hmm.
our lives and on the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are.
Where do you use the word secular in all of this?
I tend not to.
I know.
Because I think it's probably as unhelpful as clergy and lay.
Yeah.
Because all of life is God's gift to us and worthy of God's love, not just what we do at the church. So I would. The secular and religious would be, I think, a very equal thing to the clergy and the lay. It's kind of a false distinction that doesn't get us very far. Thanks for that question. Any others?
I'm thinking about just the notion, or you wanting to kind of bring up the value of the scattered.
Mm-hmm.
Scattered ministry, or I can't get away from the language. And I'm just wondering, what do you feel suffers? Like when we put too much of an emphasis on the gathering, do you feel that we as scattered ministry, that we suffer, that we're not wholehearted or taking seriously our roles in the scattered capacity? Mm-hmm. Like what suffers because of that?
I think the church suffers. From not having a fuller understanding of what it means to be God's people.
Uh-huh.
I showed an example last night from a sermon that I had done, and I asked people, instead of using the word ministry, I was using God's people at work. What is it that keeps you from being God's people at work?
Mm-hmm.
And had them write down answers and bring them up. And the results were astonishing because it was daily life. It was most people said busyness, which is going to work, going to school, doing what we're supposed to be doing. And the one that hurt me the most was a cluster of family responses. One of the people said mother, and I don't know for a fact, but I can only assume that that person was caring for an elderly mother, and that responsibility was keeping that person from being God's people at work in the world, which we define as doing something extra in the church.
Right.
And so that person never got affirmation for the fact that caring for mother was an incredibly important ministry.
Right.
We should be asking that person how we can help them do that ministry, praying for them, equipping them, sending them back out to do it, forgiving them when they come back because they didn't do it as well as they wanted to do, and starting over again. We suffer because we keep asking people to do something more. What do we do in our churches? Please come to the shelter. Please come to this class. Please teach for us. Just the list is just time and talent sheets that we hand out. And people feel guilty because they can't do
right.
it. So I think we're suffering as a church because we see ourselves spiraling down And because people can't do what we want them to do, yeah, when they're already doing what God wants them to be doing.
Yeah.
So let's affirm that. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't want to put down the gathering at all. But I want to lift that scattering up. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a phenomenal place to go to worship if walking in the door somebody said, how did you go this week? Where was God active in your life? Where did you fail? Mm-hmm. Let's offer forgiveness. Let's pray for you. And let's help you out and send you back out again. Rather than, is there anybody out there that can teach fifth grade Sunday school? Yeah. We really need one more person to teach fifth grade Sunday school.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's principally the church. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to do a little group exercise here. I'm going to break you two into pairs, and then those you two tables are going to be threesomes. This is a reading from Martin Luther on marriage. We're not going to read the whole thing. But you can read it. It's worth reading, but we don't have the time to read the whole thing. In the first paragraph, he sets up his thesis of this passage. And he is talking about himself. And he says, natural reason looks at married life and says, must I rock the baby, wash its diapers, make its bed, smell its stench, stay up nights with it, take care of it when it cries, hear it, and take care of my wife and all these things in life? Must I do that? Natural reason says, you're a wretched fellow. You shouldn't have done this. Now your life is just wretchedness and bitterness. And then the second paragraph is the important one. He says, what then does Christian faith say to this as opposed to natural reason? It opens its eyes, looks upon all these insignificant, distasteful, and despised duties in the spirit, and is aware that they are all adorned with divine approval as with the costliest gold and jewels. Wow. He goes on in the next two paragraphs and keeps talking about how much God delights in and approves of these things that we would naturally call distasteful and despised. And just that, as I was saying that, the image of dancing came to mind, that this is dancing with other people. So with that definition of life in mind, what I'd like for you to do is turn your sheet over. And I did not make arrangements. Do you have writing instruments? Do we have some?
No. Can
you grab a couple? Sam's going to come to our rescue. While she's getting pencils and pens, you can start thinking what you're going to do. I want you to spend some time by yourself in this left column, writing down what it is that you do, what are the activities, roles, and relationships and responsibilities of your day-to-day life. I'd like for you to include in the list that you're going to write in this left column those things that bring you great delight, those things that you love to do, but also include some of those distasteful, insignificant, distasteful, and despised duties. So include both of those. Once you get your list built, then we're going to move on to the next step, and I'll tell you about that if you have a little bit of time to think and write. Next step. When I've been working with people, I've mentioned before that people have a hard time seeing their daily lives as ministry. They have a hard time seeing what they do from day to day as being of value to God. And they definitely wouldn't say that what they do from day to day is adorned with divine approval as with the costliest gold and jewels. I had a class a couple years ago, and I assigned the students to write a one-page essay on to pick something they had done that week and to tell about the ministry that took place in that moment. And I had one student that really struggled, gave me a couple examples that were really not all that good. And then she wrote this incredibly beautiful paragraph. I read it at Vespers last Wednesday night about caring for her mom, who has Alzheimer's, and how difficult that is for her because her mom doesn't remember from minute to minute, and how she felt like going there was a waste of time because her mom wouldn't remember that where she went. If she goes on Monday morning, her sister comes on Monday afternoon, her mom wouldn't remember that she'd been there that morning. She talks about how difficult it is to get in the car and go do that because she knows she's just not accomplishing anything. And then at the very end, she says, she said, I don't feel like I'm making a meaningful difference. The Bible clearly calls us to care for the least of these, the widows, which my mom is, and the marginalized. Having a lasting effect on my mom is not the reason I go to visit her. I go visit because I am called to. What happens when I visit, I leave to God. I thought it was just an incredibly beautiful summary of all of this. But people have a really hard time getting to that because we have not taught them how to do that. What I found interesting is that the person next to us can look at what we're doing and identify the ministry in it. Can identify how God is working to provide daily bread for our neighbors in what we're doing. So what I'd like for you to do is in the right column it says for your conversation partner's notes. You might want to just use that for you yourself to take notes as you talk to your conversation partner. What I'd like for you to do is take turns telling what it is that you do to your partner. Pick one thing and say on Monday morning I have to fill out this report. Whatever it is. And then your partner reflects back to you how that is adorned with divine approval as with the costliest gold and jewels, how that is a means by which God is providing daily bread for our neighbors, okay? And you can take notes in your right column as your partner tells you about that, okay? So good animated conversations here at your tables. I found myself sitting there just listening to the noise of it all without being able to hear what was being said, and I was jealous and I wasn't in on all the conversations at once. Tell me what happened in your conversations, what you heard, what you shared. Let me be a part of your conversations a little bit here.
We kind of talked about how we really focused on our list, on our holding life, and not necessarily what, down lake we might have done more. Mm-hmm. Or,
is it easier here to hold into identify stuff than at home?
No. I was actually saying, in my previous job, I saw my ministry a lot more than I do here.
Okay.
So, for me, it's more difficult to see the ministry that I do if I'm doing any here.
Did you get some glimpses from your conversation partner?
No.
Not much help.
My operating assumption was that it would be easier to see day-to-day life here as ministry because it's a place of administration. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying, it's
it is.
Interesting. Others, what happened in your conversations?
Well, I made the comment after, our group was sharing is that that ministry manifests itself in so many different ways, and it's really sort of so pervasive throughout our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And everything.
If we define ministry as something besides doing something extra.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Any particular things come out of your conversation of seeing things in a new way?
Megan and I started writing verbs. And Patrick started with nouns. He wrote brother, husband, father, friend, coworker, neighbor, things like that. Yeah. And then that made us add things to it.
Yeah, I was really struck by that because I think I often silo vocation into something I can get paid for. I'm a teacher, that's a helping profession, and so I really identify strongly with my work. But really, ministry is a posture. It's not always an activity. It's it's how you're in relationship with people or with the world. And so yeah, seeing Patrick's page, I was like, oh, I need to check myself about where I categorize ministry and how I limit it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Can you say more about the posture
part? Just like any time we're in relationship, that's ministry. And so our posture towards other people, whether it's having to exercise a lot of patience or compassion or openness, mm-hmm. like those are opportunities for ministry because sometimes we need God's help to do those things.
Has it been helpful to think in terms of providing daily bread for neighbors versus ministry?
Yeah, I like that more expansive. Just it gets us away from the old definition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other things you were talking about? Sable was talking.
It was occurring to me that it wasn't so much what we did in our daily lives that when we think of ourselves and how we do it, and if we want to be ministers in the world, it wasn't so much what we do, but how we did it.
Okay.
With the love and the, like you're talking about, patient postures, the love and the compassion, and the thinking of the other person first, and wanting to be of service in every way we can. And so, and your attitude about all of the above. Is what would really turn your life around to one of 100% all-time ministry. If you're treating everybody the way you'd like to be treated, for instance, the way we're supposed to, and spreading the good news that Jesus wants us to.
So Megan says she needs to be more aware of where, and you're saying be more aware of
how.
How you do things, not so much what you do. In the phrasing of all this, too, I found there's a fine Lutheran distinction about doing things for God. Luther was really pretty hard on that God doesn't need stuff from us. Our neighbor does, he says. It's a very fine Lutheran distinction, but I found it to be incredibly helpful in this conversation. It's not, oftentimes we ask the question, what are we doing for God? That's not a Lutheran question. And I don't find it to be a very helpful question, but to ask the question, what is God already doing in us? Because God is the actor in his relationship. God is seeking to restore creation through us. God's the actor, not us. So what is it that God is doing in and through us for the benefit of our neighbor? It's a much more helpful way to approach the question. What is your ministry? Or what did you do for God this week? How is God at work in you? In those things. Other things in your conversations? They sounded like great conversations. Very animated.
I think one theme that ran throughout our discussion is just that in our work in the village, there are dimensions of it that give us joy and dimensions of it that are challenging. And that they're closely connected to one another. And sometimes what makes something unique or it's like kind of like you were saying about gathered and scattered. It's kind of like each part is connected. Like you can't eliminate the parts that are burdensome or drudgery and still have the joyful parts. It's like they need one another. And so
we need this thing.
Right. So I guess the willingness to accept the whole of the role and those parts that are more challenging, and that is part of the ministry, is the acceptance of the whole of the task. So that's something that kind of came up for me.
Thank you. Well, where we're going from here is that session 3 is going to be split into 2 parts. Tomorrow between supper and Vespers, 45 minutes, and then Thursday between supper and Vespers, 45 minutes. No more teaching. But we're going to get into this exploration and application more. Tomorrow we're going to be looking at stories and working on our stories in particular. I would like for you, in order to be prepared for that conversation, is to try and keep some sort of a journal, a list of notes of what you see around you. This kind of stuff that we were just talking about. But when you see something happening, just make a note of it that I saw Tim out here in the hallway repairing the tiles of the trips. And just stuff that you see, people working and how God might be at work and what they're doing. Keep that list somehow, written, mental, or not. And then have that available for that conversation tomorrow. My book is for sale, and the course outline that I gave you yesterday has on there the reading. If you want to know more about the Gathered Scattered Church, that's chapter 5. And if you want to know more about the autoimmune disorder, yeah, that would be chapter 4. I look forward to seeing you again.